Ruth chapter 2, and Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth, of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. So if you look on your paper, we come now to verse 2. And Ruth the Moabitess said unto Naomi, let us now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him, in whose sight I shall find grace. And so she said, go, my daughter. Now, corn is used in the Bible often generically, and so it is here, just meaning grain. And the grain to be harvested is barley. But it says in all of this that they were to glean. And you know what gleaning is, when you're taking the grain from its stalk, and you take it, and then you can get the chaff off, and you can finally have good grain. There's various mechanical ways to clean grains, and there's ones that are electronic, too. There's different ways to glean, but it's important to remember sometimes words, and we can use the word glean and know what that manual fashion, but it actually means to gather. To gather. That's what this word is in the Bible, in its origin, meaning to gather. And we are supposed to gather together ourselves. And this is an example today of the Sabbath of our gathering. We know from Leviticus 23... where the Sabbath is mentioned, that we're to find it as a holy convocation. In other words, we are to gather. And sometimes little words bring a lot of activity, and so it is with gathering. To gather ourselves together is not always an easy thing. We have to get ourselves ready for transportation. We have to get our households in order. Have to have fuel for the car, perhaps. We might need the various things like together today. When we gathered, we decided we would have sandwiches. And so we had to gather ourselves together for that. And being of people wanting to help, we were informed we didn't need to bring sandwiches. And so it looked, but my wife wanted to bring pickles. So you'd have something with your sandwich as we gathered together. Now remember that simple word, gather, as you go through your life and it comes to your activities before God. We want to gather ourselves together. And that often means we put on the shelf things that might not be helpful in our gathering. And that's important too. When we come together, we should not bring anything that's going to be distracting from our gathering. And that, for some reason, brings together, in my mind, Bill Cook. I took a call from him yesterday, and he wanted to be with us today. I certainly notice he isn't. But he's found out that the problem with his headaches and so forth is stenosis. And that's a very difficult thing with the narrowing and pinching somewhat of the nerves that's giving him the headaches. So you might always remember our sick ones, but that's what Bill is having to put up with. Okay, back to the text. And she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And her hap, or the just by sheer coincidence, she lighted on the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. Now, I put in the study sheet, reapers. In the Hebrew, that's masculine. And we'll find a little later in the context, maidens, which is clearly feminine. But it just happened that she was in that field. Like it just happened that you opened the Bible and there was the answer to your question. Like it just happened that you prayed for help and the help came. Like it just happened that you tuned in on the radio or the TV, and that made sense. Those things just happened by coincidence. Right? I speak in jest. What happens when you find these opportunities provided for you? Well, the Bible word for that is calling. We are called, and that is why we then gather. There's a whole momentum here to understand. And so she was gathering where there were men. And not quite by accident, but we have this man, Samuel, putting it in that term for us, so that we understand some things don't just happen because of coincidence. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said unto the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered and said, "The Lord bless you." Now again, Bethlehem. Where was Christ born? Bethlehem. And what does he say about himself? I am the bread. And what does the name Bethlehem mean? Isn't that interesting how all this weaves together? And you're saying Ruth, and all of that's in Ruth. And this book is meant for us to be understood in what many people would think only are things of New Testament origin. Now, coming by this information is something that I did because I studied. And I'm going to departure a little bit for you, but to study means more than to read. And I would encourage you to do what you can from time to time in study. You might not like big books, but sometimes they're very helpful because what was possible to be put into the minds of our forefathers millennia ago, such as this, we just haven't learned in this day and age. We don't know what the particular words mean sometimes. And often I find in our coming and going, we worry about old words in Hebrew and Greek, and we have to know those things. But if we were just more informed, we wouldn't worry about that. Some words are defined by their context, like love. And there's sometimes the importance that we see between agape love and filial love, as we would say, godly love and brotherly love. But the context helps us to understand that as much as anything in our world today. Sometimes the foreign language or the ancient language isn't nearly all that you need. What you need is the context of the day in which you are. And that will reveal to you many things if you just think of the context of the words in which we use them today. And so when we say Bonnie, there's a certain context now that we understand. Thank you. Very interesting, isn't it? What we can learn from words. Even our own names. And so in verse, 5, then said Boaz unto his servant, who was set over this reaper, "Whose damsel is this?" Now he had just come from Bethlehem, and the whole town was alive with, "Hey, Naomi's back." I think he knew who she was. It doesn't say that directly, but I put in your note here, where was that? Maybe I didn't put it in there. But there's a note from that you can find in a little later when David comes forward, and Saul says, "Whose son is this?" He knew whose son it was. He'd already met Saul. David and Saul knew each other. David was just a young fella compared to Saul. So sometimes words like this tell us, it's kind of like saying, whoa. And who is the father of this child? And we know who that is. It's that kind of a saying. And so in this, we find out that Pope Boaz means in him is strength. Now if we go down to the footnote 2.1, Boaz is also the name of one of the two pillars in front of the temple. The other is Jachin or Jachin. And that one means he shall establish. There was the pillars of fire and smoke that led Israel. And so when Solomon's temple was built long after this, well, a couple hundred years, those pillars were there in the front of the courtyard, certainly in the restructuring of the temple. It is said that the capitals of the temple were solid metal. Some say gold, some say copper. But because things changed by the time of the temple that the Israelites came back to and rebuilt, they were just metal. They weren't solid. They were just an overlay, you might say. So they're in this field, and as I put a note to you, 2 verse 3, the parable of the sower is the way this, you know, you think of this seed being thrown into the field. And you might think of this entire story in the sense of the sower sowing seed. There was a seed sown in the life of Ruth, and it finally was bearing fruit. And so in verse 5, when Boaz is, he says, whose damsel is this? A damsel is a young, unmarried virgin. Now clearly she had been married, but I think we can understand that in the context of the church of God. It is symbolic of the church. We are to be virgins spiritually, unmarried, and seeking to be the bride of Christ. That is what we look at then. And so we read on. And the serpent said that said over the reapers answered and said, it is the Moabitish damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. And she said, I ask you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and has continued even from the morning until now. She tarried a little while in the house. So they had a tent or something out there in the field where they could be refreshed. And in that tent was where she found a little bit of peace and quiet. And said Boaz unto Ruth, hear you not, my daughter, go to the glean in another field, neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. So it says maidens, and that meant is a feminine gender, or young women. And you might then think of potential brides. I have that rhetorical question that I was remarking to you about is down here in note 3, 1 Samuel 17, 56 and 57. But he says, so you stay right here in this field. Now let's read on because that's important. Let your eyes be upon the field that they do reap, and go you not after them. Have I not charged the young men that they shall not touch you? And when you be athirst, go into the vessels and drink and of that which the young men have drawn. She was not aware of the customs of these people. And so she had to be instructed that you are a virgin and you don't take yourself into a field lifting your skirts in your work when there's guys around. There's a sense of propriety, a sense of understanding the difference between a man and a woman, of being discreet. And so that tells us a little bit about how we should present ourselves, certainly in public, that we be discreet. that we be covering, and that we understand that a woman's or a young lady's place is not in amongst a whole lot of guys, because the guys will want to look, you know. They may want to touch. I think all you ladies know about that stuff. If you don't, you better talk to the man. Or you maybe ought to have me talk to the man. But that's how life goes. A man is very interested in seeing and touching. And that's why this femininity was supposed to be stressed in this. Now, think again, as I said, she was unaware of their custom. Evidently in Moab, men and women would work together. That was not an issue there, so she had to be educated. When you come into the ways of God, you have to be educated to know how to behave, that there's a difference. We are very careful about many things. We try to have our mind in the fashion as Christ's mind, that we're looking after things in a godly way. And we put the human element on the shelf. And so the men were warned to keep their distance from Ruth. You see that in 2:9 and also in verse 15 ahead. And when she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and reproach her not. Let her go do that, and you stay away." And so there was this direction from Boaz. And as you go through life, you'll find that coming into the ways of God means leaving the ways of man alone. And here's what was happening. She was to leave the ways of these men alone and not get involved with them. And there's that mention then in verse 9 of vessels. So there was some place prepared, a tent, or for refreshing. It's like the coolers that are under the tree when you go outside and there's something at the beach or something. You might have a tent, you put up an awning of some type, and you might keep the ice chest under it with your cool drinks and whatever treats or food you might have. And, you know, that's protected from the sun. And these vessels were there. There had been provision made. And that brings us to the analogy or the allegory. The symbolic meaning that things are prepared for God's people. We come together in our services, such as this, with preparation. You prepare, I prepare, whoever is before you prepares. You prepare in your mind, you prepare in your spirit. The presenter is preparing in his heart and in preparation and material. And these things, so we don't just come together and it kind of happens. It should be organized, and so it is in your life. You should be very organized. We all have the problem with the garage, don't we? You look at mine, yeah, it's not real organized. I'm trying. There have been times in my life when it's been as organized as Joy's kitchen, but right now it sure isn't. Too many screwdrivers, 5 pliers. I got too much of this and that I've gotten over the recent history getting tools from Dad. And so I need to work on that. Bury my heart to you a little bit. If I don't, my wife will get after me. It's supposed to be organized. And your life should be organized, not just in the kitchen, not just in the garage. Be organized in your mind. And so they had prepared a place where they could go and refresh. Verse 10, and she fell on her face and bowed herself to the ground and said, "Why have I found grace in your eyes, that you'll take knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger, a foreigner? Why are you treating me so kindly? I'm not an Israelite." Now, in Christ's varied family, as we are, you and I are his family, he has taken knowledge of us. And there has come that time in life, if you haven't been there yet, you will, when you'll bow your knees and you'll say, "Why have you taken such interest in me? Why are you working with me? Why are you calling me? I am totally amazed, considering where I am and what I am." And again, that is finding your calling, as she did here. And she couldn't believe that he would be so wonderful to her and find grace for her. What is grace? Now, this man uses it in this verse. Samuel is talking about the same thing you and I do, unmerited pardon. So we go on to 11. And Boaz answered and said to her, "It has fully been showed me all that you have done unto your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, and how you have left your father and your mother in the land of your nativity, are come unto a people where you knew not know before this time." So she left her father and mother, and we certainly do that in our marriages. We leave our parents. There comes a time when young people then leave the freedom of doing being cared for, and they have to then go about taking care of themselves. And so we leave our fathers and mothers, and we leave the family and join God's family here. And that's part of the important picture. And she's now joining another family. 12, and the Lord recompense your work. Well, the word is recompense there. A full reward of giving you of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you are come to trust. It helps us to understand what it is, the wings of the great eagle, to take us to safety. It isn't a location. It's a place in your mind. Now, it might be a physical location, but you should first have the wings covering you personally, like this cherubim covered the ark of the covenant. Then she said, "Let me find favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me," and that's what Christ does for us, "and for that you have spoken friendly unto my handmaid, though I be not like unto one of your own handmaidens." Though I'm not one of your kind, you've taken me in and treated me just like you. And so I think in all of this you see this analogy that Ruth is the church and Boaz is Christ. And yet this was a real story. It isn't just something that's been spun for us as a fairy tale. It's a real story that shows God's direction in people's lives, just as he has directed your life. And so in verse 14, we have a number of thoughts. And Boaz said to her at mealtime, so they had a structure to their time. They knew when it was time to eat. And there was structure. "Come you here and eat the bread and dip your morsel in the vinegar." Bread, and of course Christ is the bread we eat at the time of Passover. And the vinegar is water mingled with a little vinegar for refreshment. It took just a small amount to make the water taste slightly different, and it was refreshing to them. I don't know if it's refreshing to you. I've had vinegar water. I haven't grown up on vinegar water, though, so. Anybody in here like vinegar water? Oh, 1, 2, 3. Well, I guess we got some that know of it's a. Maybe I'm putting too much vinegar in my water. That might be it. Add honey? Well, whatever. And then it goes on to say, and she sat beside the reaper. So the guys were there eating together, but then nothing indiscreet would happen because they were all together, you know, sitting. And he reached her parched corn, and she did eat, and was sufficed and left. I explained in the Bible study in Tampa this last week that there's this little town in Arizona called Ajo, spelled A-J-O. It's up a little bit in elevation, and Ajo is the site of a copper mine that's no longer functioning. It's got a big little hole in the ground, and the mining village around it is almost decimated. There's a lot of what in Arizona we say are Mexicans, and we say that politely, not in a discriminating way. They're people from Mexico. And they're kind people, they're generous people in a lot of ways, but you know the Dairy Queen's closed up now? The A&W root beer stand's closed up now? There's a couple second-hand stores, there's a guy with a wrecker, there's the Shell gasoline station, there's a small IGA a supermarket, but there's not a lot in Ajo. And it's a dry place. It's a hot, high elevation desert. And I've told Joyette I'd like to move to Ajo. And I got a funny look. I says, we can move to Ajo, and I could hire a couple of these ladies in town, and I could open up a business called I'm Parched. And I could go into business parching grain. Wild rice, wheat, corn, I could get into the parching business. And the company name would be I'm Parched, Ajo, Arizona. To me, it just sings, you know. Well, Ajo's too far away from any mall. So I know I will never get to move to Ajo. But it's just a little funny thing to introduce you to the fact of parching. Some of you probably know a little bit about parching. And this is the way they parch barley. I put it there in your note. You harvest the grain, then you dry it. It's not real wet because it's ready for harvest. Now barley, if you look at barley, it looks a lot like wheat, except the head of it's got a lot of more feather to it. It's got a lot more chaff. It's a rough grain. And so when you're winnowing barley, there's a lot of chaff. And then after you've dried it, the next thing is to soak it overnight in water. And then the next day, you dry it again. And then you put it in a dry pan and fry it. That's how you get parched grain. That's your trials. That's what you go through. Your parched grain. And so she was eating parched grain. This is what they had for them as food. And sometimes that speaks to what we go through. When she had risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, let her glean among the sheaves, reproach her not. So let her get into some of the field, not just the leftovers around the edge. Let her also have some of the handfuls of purpose for her. I just drop a little bit and leave it for her, that she may glean then. And don't tell her don't. So she gleaned in the field until evening, and beat out that which she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. That's that 0.65 bushel. Half a bushel is what she got for all of her day's work. So you think about half a bushel of grain, and you might think of it in a glass jar, that might be almost 3 gallons of wheat. And that's all that she got for the whole day's work. Now that's a lot of barley to... I said wheat, but barley to get in the harvest. Verse 18, and she took it up, went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, and she brought forth, and she gave it to her that she had reserved after she was sufficed. So she brought some of the lunch, evidently, for her mother, or mother-in-law. And she said, where did you glean today? And she said, where did you work? Blessed be he that did take knowledge of you. And she showed her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said that the man's name with whom I have worked today is Boaz. Boaz, a type of Christ, works with you. And Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, Blessed be you of the Lord, who has not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead. And Naomi said unto her, the man is near of kin unto us, one of our next kinsmen, or one that has the right to redeem you, to make it so that you don't have to have widowhood. And you can get into the word work of the word redeem and do a nice little study on that word. So I put in note 4 that what was being suggested was a Levirate marriage. This is a type of marriage in which the brother of a deceased man is obliged to marry his brother's widow. And the widow is obliged to marry her deceased husband's brother. Or you can, instead of using the word brother, you can say nearest relative. And that's what a Levirate marriage is. You leverage the whole thing. Now, in this opportunity, there then could be the birth of children. So a question maybe to think about, whose name would the children have? Anybody want to tell me or guess? Huh? Well, that's what you'd first think. But if it's a spiritual analogy, you would have your new husband's name. You're going to be given a new name. Now, you could name them after the old husband. Bonnie didn't like being named after horses, though. And we found out Larry came by his handle because of a dead relative.
No, my father's best friend.
But father's best friend. Question?
Back in those days, if the brother died having no children, the first child that the woman married to the brother had, that child went to that in that brother's name.
I don't know in whose name it went, and that could be a study too. I haven't studied that. I'm just giving you the analogy that if this is picturing Christ, we would then maybe have a new name. I could be Chuck Zimmerman in the kingdom, I guess. But what's wrong with Chuck, son of Christ? Or son of God? That's just what I'm saying. Ms. Sizemore, why don't you study that and tell me what you find out? That'll save me studying it. And Ruth the Moabitess said, he said unto me also that you shall keep fast or close by my young men until they have ended all the harvest. And so Naomi said unto Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maidens, that they meet you not in any other field. So don't go wandering. And so we shouldn't wander either. And that's one of the problems we have today. People wander around from congregation to congregation. Whether the congregation is the one of God or not, you cannot be gathering if you go looking. That's the point. You find the family is where you set down your root. So she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of the barley harvest and of wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law. So I have note 5. When wheat harvest began at Pentecost, as the former did at Passover, from the beginning of the one to the end of the other were 3 months. Indeed, from the Passover to Pentecost were 7 weeks, or are 7 weeks, which was the difference between the beginning of one harvest and the beginning of the other. And I got that from Gill's commentary. But we're talking about two harvests here. At Passover time, barley. And at Pentecost, wheat. So you have a barley harvest
and a wheat harvest.
How many resurrections do you have?
Three.
You have two that are to life, though. The third is the resurrection to damnation. So resurrections to life, and the barley harvest is smaller and the wheat harvest is greater. They may not be indicative of the particular holy days of unleavened bread and Pentecost, but they do tell us that there are two harvests. And I give you the allegory that we could be talking about the second and first resurrection. So that gives us an understanding of the first two chapters. And so it's, as I put at the end of the paper, onward to salvation. It was salvation for Ruth and Naomi in a literal sense. And as we read it, we understand it historically. And I trust that we all understand it spiritually too. So that takes care of the activities for the day.